Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode brought to you by Appeal. Appeal is a plant-based protective layer that helps produce last up to twice as long. Learn more at appeal.com. Hello and welcome to Cooking Issues. This is Dave Arnold, your host of Cooking Issues, coming to you live on the Heritage Radio Network every Tuesday, although I think this is the last one, maybe before the new year. I don't know, we'll see. This is, in fact, the Christmas episode. I'm your host, Dave. I'm here in the Lower East Side of Manhattan. We got Nastasia the Hammer Lopez at her undisclosed Southern California location. How you doing?
Good.
Yeah. We have John, intrepid customer service representative, back up in Lime. Is it Old Lime or Lime? Is there really a difference? Or is there only really one Lime?
I think there is a difference, but we are in Lime proper.
Lime proper, not Old Lime.
No.
You think Old Lime is one of those kind of like post editions where Old Lime is actually newer, but they call it Old Lime and they add like an extra D and an E, like oldie limey?
I don't know. I hadn't thought about it, but you could be right.
Yeah, in Mystic, Connecticut, the real Mystic is Mystic, and then they have something called Oldie Mysticky Villagey with like all kinds of like stupid shoppies. Do you guys hate? By the way, okay, got Matt in Rhode Island. How you doing?
Good. I can't wait to hear the end of that question.
Yeah, and I want to bring him in now just because anytime I get to hear his voice is a pleasure. Christmas tradition. We have on the show today, friend of the show, Phil Bravo. How you doing, Phil?
Good morning, Dave. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well. And as you know, Phil Bravo is the closest living human being to Thurl Ravencroft, a.k.a. Tony the Tiger. He was also one of the voices in Spike Jonze's novelty band back in the 40s and 50s, and was most importantly, for the purposes of today's show, not the narrator, who is Boris Karloff, also a great voice, but the singer of the original Grinch. Yeah, yeah. So I have to go through that every year in case people haven't listened before, but that's and Nastasia, how long have you been pestering Phil about doing the Grinch?
Doing the Grinch?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think you did it the first time like 10 years ago, Phil, at the Gaff karaoke, right? Or something?
It was at the Gaff, 48th and 9th Christmas karaoke. Yeah. Non-denominational Gaff, holiday karaoke.
Now, that bar, which you guys used to like to go to, the Gaff, is named after the hook that you stick through a fish's face, right?
Don't know. I thought it was, like, when you make a mistake, right?
Oh, like a gaff?
Yeah.
I think that's two Fs and an E.
Oh, really?
Huh. I think, well, I think we just assumed based on our behavior.
Well, also, that bar is near what used to be a film neighborhood. That's why the Film Center building and everything's over there. Maybe that's where gaffers went.
True.
That would be weird if gaffers had their own bar. Man. What do gaffers do?
Everyone gets their own bar.
Sound equipment?
Everyone gets their own bar. Why can't gaffers have? They tape things to things. Gaff tape.
They tape what to what, Dave?
They tape stuff to stuff. You know what I mean?
It's things, like, give me an example.
To things, stuff
give
to
me
stuff.
An example.
It's like, hey, moron, that light's going to fall and kill the talent. Get the gaffer. And
yeah.
You know, like that.
So if gaffers gaff, then what does the best boy do?
I mean, first of all, are they still called the best boy? Or do they have a gender-neutral best boy? Yeah. I think that is just like, that's like the highest position you can have without having a producer credit, right? Like best boy. Like, I don't know, I'm not in the business, someone needs to tell me, but it's like, I thought, like, you know, if the coffee that you get is really, really good, you get like some like third tier producer credit. So like just below that is like best whatever, right? I mean, on Stas, you hang out with
these
people.
I thought it was most favored dog on set. It's like,
no, that would be amazing.
Boy, you're the best boy.
Can you imagine if they just had a bunch of dogs chilling and then the dog starts barking and gnawing on stuff? What?
Yeah, and then at the end of the production, they nominate one to have been best boy. It makes sense.
It does. What if instead of a dog, it was a rabbit, and the rabbit continuously chewed through all of the cables, so they have to keep going through rabbits because they would electrocute themselves on the regular?
That seems like that would hold up production quite a bit.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, it's all about tradition. If the tradition is having a rabbit chewing through your cables, why do rabbits chew through electrical cables? Or were you guys not aware that this was a thing?
No, I was just waiting for the punchline.
No, this is a real thing.
It's not a setup.
This is real. Oh, speaking of punchline-y things, Nastasia, I have found a fact that I did not know that I think you might actually enjoy, not being sarcastic.
Okay.
Are you aware that everyone who knows that Nastasia Lopez works with cooks, but is actually a fan of comedians, right? So not a fan of cooks, but a fan of comedians, but works in the cooking field, right? Okay.
Yes.
That's fair, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Cooks and comedians, same patron saint.
Ooh.
What does that mean?
What do you mean? Aren't you at least part Catholic? Patron saint. You know what a patron saint
is.
So
it's real.
Yeah, it's real. Hmm. Yeah. St. Lawrence. Get this. Here's why. St. Lawrence is the patron saint of both cooks and comedians because of one wisecrack he made while being martyred. So he's being, well, so the legend goes. Who knows how it actually went down, right? So there's these seven deacons, and he was the last one to get martyred. And whoever it was that was, persecuting him, some Roman weasel, was persecuting him. And said, "You gotta bring us all of the riches of the church, all of it. Bring it all, because we're gonna confiscate all of this crap." And so I'm on the radio show books. And so then what happens is instead he gives all the stuff away to the poor, brings the poor folks to the thing. He's like, "Here's the riches of the church. It's the poor people." Wah, wah. That's not why he's the thing, though. Here's what happens: the Romans are so mad that they order him to be cooked over a fire. Right, and here's where it comes. So they spread out a big gridiron, a big grate, and they fire up the coals or whatever they had back in the day, and they throw him on the coals. And before he dies, he goes, "I'm done on this side. Turn me over." And that was it. Patron saint of comedians and cooks.
That's good.
Also, if it's Lawrence, it seems appropriate that it's patron saint Larry.
Yeah, just yeah.
Larry for comedians.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Larry, but can you imagine being "I'm going to get this one last zinger in. I'm done on this side. Turn me over." Boom, boom. If only they had this stuff, the drums. If only they had drum kits back in the day.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Yeah.
I thought you would enjoy that. Did you enjoy that?
That's good. And I picture Larry David as that saint.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Oh,
nice.
Yeah.
We could totally do that.
We could get you a figurine. We got to make you a bespoke.
I'm sure they have a Larry David patron saint. Somewhere.
Well, we have a meat glue question later if we get to it, so we could talk about getting a Larry David mask, stuffing it with meat, and making an actual meat like Saint Larry David that we could grill on one side and then turn over. What do you think?
Don't know about that.
Do you remember how disturbed people were when we were making meat Easter bunnies and deep frying them, Nastasia?
I don't think I was with you then.
Really?
Yeah.
We took the Easter Bunny chocolate molds that they had at the FCI, and then we meat glued, because we want it to be nice and firm. We meat glue and packed meat into the things, and then low temped them, and then we had these meat bunnies, and then we would deep fry the meat bunnies. And for some reason, people found it disturbing.
I don't think that's that bad.
Me neither.
Yeah, this doesn't make any sense. If you were down to cook some rabbit anyway, what difference does it make?
Well, yeah, here's another thing.
Here's
another thing, guys. Since we don't have a bar anymore, another thing we were gonna do last year, we didn't get it in time. But this year, we didn't do it. Is we bought some silicone Santa Claus molds, right? And then we took our chicken liver moose, right? And packed them into the Santa molds, chilled them, and then had Santa, like Santa chicken liver things. They were pretty good. The problem is that they get, like, if you have to chill them too much, they get a nasty kind of bloom when they come out. If you let them sit around too long, obviously they oxidize because it's chicken liver moose. But the molded Santa moose, I thought was a nice thing, you know? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wait, can I jump the line with a cooking question?
Why not?
Okay. I was cooking skate for the first time a few weeks ago.
Wait. You've never cooked skate before?
I had never cooked skate before.
Okay, how have you lived this long as a pescatarian? And just curious, how have you lived this long as a pescatarian from Rhode Island and not cooked skate
well,
before?
Well, first of all, I spent many a year as a vegan, so that's part
all
of
right,
it.
All right,
yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, so, and my wife and I, Kate, we're sitting down at a meal, and all of a sudden she's like, are your lips tingling? I'm like, yes, they are. And then we look this up, and apparently skate sometimes secretes, like, urea. Is any of this ringing a bell? Should one be worried about that? Is it a flaw? Like, what? How do we feel about
this? No, so listen, skate is a cartilaginous fish in the way that sharks are, right? So all of those cartilaginous fishes use, you know, certain kinds of, you know, those kinds of compounds for buoyancy, some more than others. Buoyancy changes, and it's just they do that, whereas the bony fishes typically do not. Right. Also, some squid are very high in kind of unpleasant, you know, things. That's why, like, certain squid have to be treated differently than other squid. Right. That said, the average skate that you buy in a market does not have, high amounts of those kind of compounds. Whereas some sharks, if you buy them, they do. John, you ever buy a shark and had it be real, like, you know, real stinky, real? Anyway, the skates that you buy in a market probably don't, and that's also probably not causing your allergic tingly reaction. There is a relatively well-known allergy some people have to skate. Okay. In fact, a famous chef, my brother-in-law, I won't call him out, but his name rhymes with Biley Mufrain. He is allergic to skate, and so as a consequence, because he didn't want to be allergic to everything, he would fabricate it as much as possible to try to, like, beat the allergy out of himself. So it's real, but, you know, I wouldn't be concerned, and I don't think it's because of residual urea. Could be wrong, but I don't think I am. But here's the thing. What's awesome about skate, did you notice the best thing about skate, Matt?
No. What is it?
It is one of the very few fishes, and John, Phil, you know what I'm going to say. What is amazing about skate? I lost John. Where is he?
I'm here. I don't know that there's meat on both sides of the bone.
You stumped it.
No, it's that you can beat the ever-loving crap out of it. You can hammer it, still tastes
forgiving.
Good.
Yes, that's true.
It's the most forgiving of all fishes. Of all fishes created on this earth, skate is the most forgiving. You can just do anything to it.
I read something. So after we started to go down this rabbit hole of, like, well, why is this tingling sensation happening? And I definitely read things like, the more you cook skate, the more, like, tender it gets and the better and whatever. I was like, what?
That's a little bit much.
Then I threw a piece on and was like, you know, let's test this. And it was not better having cooked for longer. It was.
Yeah. However, it is the most forgiving, I think, fish. The weirdest fish, cartilaginous fish I've ever cooked is the fresh version. I believe the genus is Harpidon. And it's the fish that is used to make the dried specialty Bombay duck, and it is when you cook it, the entire interior of the fish completely liquefies like a gelatin. It's the weirdest fish I've ever cooked. So I used to deep fry them whole and eat them. I stopped because if you let them, they're great when they're hot, but if you let them cool off, they are vile. They are disgusting. And as everybody knows, you can't trust your family to eat when you tell them to. They just don't do it. So I couldn't have them just sitting around turning vile. But those things were great. Yeah. So I'm sorry I couldn't answer your question other than if you're both tingling and it actually, you know what? Now that I'm rethinking, if both of you are tingling, it's maybe something wrong with that particular, or something in that particular batch of skate? Because what are the odds that both of you have the same reaction? Yeah. Low, right?
Yes.
Have any of you other guys heard of this reaction with skate?
No.
Maybe it's some sort of like, you know, Rhode Island is currently like, you know, a weird poisonous land. Maybe it's Rhode Island.
Phil, you only eat tilapia, right?
That's what I was going to, what I was mainly going to say is I just know the reaction to tilapia, which is you cook tilapia and then Nastasia complains for about 37 hours.
Phil, rightly so. Listen, it's not like Nastasia's distaste for tilapia is not known to you, and it's not like it's unreasonable. It is a filth fish. It is the Kenny G of fish.
Now, Dave, it's Christmas Eve. You got to get through 7 fishes. I got it. One's got to be tilapia. I'm not. No. Fish don't grow on trees here, man.
Well, apparently they do in
that
North Carolina.
Indisputably true. Fish do not grow
so,
on trees.
Nastasia, am I allowed to say this or no?
Science.
No.
I'm not allowed to say this?
No.
All right. Okay, I will not. Now listen. First of all, you could do like a salt cod, a great appetizer, right? You could do you get some salt cod. I think the best thing to do with that is to, you know, like do like a brandad style, or like whip it up just with oil and makes a fantastic like cod dip. That's one fish right there. No tilapia, right? Like what else? What do you? You're in California. Don't they have fish over there?
He's in Portland. He decided to spread COVID up there because there wasn't enough cases.
Yep, just went coughing up the Western Seaboard.
So how long is your beard now? Have you gone full lumberjack?
Oh yeah, no, it's more ZZ Top at this point.
Oh, nice. You're not allowed to go ZZ Top unless you buy the guitar strap that allows you to flip your guitar 360 degrees in the middle while you're playing legs.
I didn't realize there was a guitar strap that didn't allow for that.
Let me ask. I was about to lose it on you, and you're like, I didn't know you.
Why go back after that? Yeah, what exactly. Dimension.
This is
Phil.
Like
what a save!
Once you've had tilapia, why go back? I think it's really the question.
What a exactly. Save. Anyway, I would basically say any other fish would be a good call. Like I would prefer if someone served me 8 pounds of escalar and I spent the rest of the night on the toilet pooping out the wax. Then,
wow,
Booker, I'm on the radio here.
No, Booker's color commentary is welcome.
Yeah. Escalar is a delicious fish, right? But it contains waxes that are, shall we say, indigestible, like the olestra of fish. And so, you know, it can have some results on the way out, is all I'm saying.
The main thing is when you're trying to, you know, create a real holiday event, you want the full-out Frank Costanza coming out of Nastasia's mouth. So you make tilapia. You don't necessarily take the bones out of the salmon.
Oh,
you like,
God,
you know.
Right.
This is what I don't like about you.
Don't devein the shrimp. Just let it go.
This is what I don't like about the greater Nastasia universe, like Marvel and DC universe. Uh-huh. Is this like friends? Like, I'm okay with messing with each other, but you guys mess with each other in ways that are like, they just make your life worse. Everybody's life is worse. Like the classic, like Nastasia universe thing is like, ooh, I'm going to make something to give you gastrointestinal distress. It's also going to give me gastrointestinal distress, but it's worth it because I get to see you suffer.
You got to commit to the joke, Dave.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, I mean, I don't know. It's like this culture of cutting off your nose to spite your face. I just don't get it.
That's what our friendship is all based on, I think. Right, Phil?
Yes, mutual spite. Yeah.
Did you meet at some sort of like misanthropes camp?
At the Hell's Kitchen. That's pretty much it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
That's true. We're just neighbors. They
should have done you guys for that instead of Jessica Jones and freaking the Flash or Dash or whatever his name is. Daredevil, that's it. Yeah. All right. So listen, before we get into should I rip through some questions and then we go? Or should we do the Phil and the charity call out, the end of the year charity call out first?
I told Phil he could get off at 9:15, so... I know. Yeah,
hey,
Phil,
listen, Nastasia.
Respectful of your schedule, Phil. I don't know.
Nastasia,
yeah.
Remember, this radio show takes place in the Eastern time zone.
Yes.
This Nastasia is also that kind of person who's like, if she is in another time zone,
what,
she's
what
like,
I heard
everything's
is that Phil can stay on for 9 more hours.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yes.
Dave,
and
I have a food question, Dave.
Oh.
Okay.
Right.
I have one. This is so I would Scotch eggs. So I want to make
delicious.
I want to make Scotch eggs, but this is
don't use tilapia, Phil. Don't use tilapia for the Scotch eggs.
That's the thing. I was
going to
wrap them in tilapia and then
yeah.
So a nice little tilapia and sausage stuffing. So if you sous vide the eggs and get like if you like do it like a ramen egg, Scotch egg instead of like the really hard boiled.
Yep.
Like
done
every time I do this, I like you know I'm trying to peel the egg. And it's like I destroy like 73 eggs on the way to one Scotch egg. So what's my
Well, then you haven't actually done it with a circulator. You've tried to imitate a circulator. Look, the super crackout method that is used with a immersion circulator, right? The problem with those is that they're so soft that they're hard to stuff, right? So you cook those at 62, right? Or if you want a little thicker, 62 and a half. You can let them cool, whatever. You crack them out, then you take them through boiling water to firm up the white on the outside. The advantage of that technique versus traditional, honestly, is that there's less white. And everybody knows that in a Scotch egg, it's really like you got your sausage and then some sort of thing that's holding the yolk together on the inside, right? So like, I think that the reducing the white ratio is a huge win of doing an actual low temperature egg for a Scotch egg. But what you're doing, you can't, if you're going to do what you want to do and you want to peel it traditionally, I would actually say put them into boiling water, simmering, right? Because you don't want them to rattle around and get busted. I would put them into very hot water because if you start from cold water, the colder the water you start with an egg, the harder it is to peel. There's been study after study of this that it's hard to peel eggs that were started from cold. So you want to go in super hot, right? And then you want to take them out before the yolk sets, so you have to time it relatively accurately. Put them in ice water to cool them down quickly so that you don't continue to cook through. Then you should have an egg whose white is hard enough to peel accurately.
All right. I'll give this a try this afternoon.
I want to say one thing. The worst friend thing that we did during the holidays is when Phil Bravo showed up late to my holiday party in my apartment because he used to live below me and Grace. Mm-hmm. And he was supposed to have eggnog as a starter drink for everyone. But he came an hour late and he hadn't even made the eggnog, hadn't even cracked the eggs. So what happened, Phil?
All right. So the way that this went down, Dave, is that I spent approximately 2 hours cracking eggs and like getting things prepped. Nastasia came. This story is flipped around. She came downstairs into our apartment.
Wait, hold on. Right. It took you 2 hours to crack eggs?
Nah, you know, it's a figurative 2 hours. It was a good amount of time. I cracked like 47 eggs or something, whatever 18 times three is. Dave, you're the scientist. Okay. All right, so I crack all these eggs. They're sitting in
18
this...
times three is 47. Exactly. What are you on, crack?
Exactly. This is why I'm a terrible cook. But I leave the eggs in the sink because it's like, you know, it's a Hell's Kitchen, tiny sink. Everything is tiny. Nastasia comes barreling into the apartment, goes
angry.
Like, take angry, turns on the water into the eggs, is like, this is all dirty. And then it took another 2 hours to make said eggnog. This isn't a great story, right, Nastasia? The setup I was doing what I was supposed to do.
Listen,
with Nastasia,
Phil,
ruining everything.
I'm not taking any sides here, but I'll tell you what. Like, all of us use the sink for messy work, so we have stuff that we're going to keep in the sink. And whenever anyone approaches me, and Phil, you should learn this. Whenever anyone gets near you when you're working in the sink, you got to do this. Oh, oh, oh!
Yeah, but I didn't know Nastasia long enough yet. So now when Nastasia comes near me,
anyone.
In any circumstance. Yeah, but when Nastasia comes
near anyone.
Any circumstance, it's just...
Phil, anyone.
Ah! Ah!
Jesus comes back from the dead, floats through your window, goes near the sink. Whoa, 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 don't jump in the sink, Jesus. Anyone. Anyone. The Pope, like, whatever. Elton John, like, whoever comes in, like... You tell them not to touch the sink because it is entirely reasonable for someone to turn on the sink. Because you know why? It's a sink. But also, it's entirely reasonable for you to be working in the sink, and so you have to make that clear. Nastassia, do you agree with me or disagree?
Yeah, but I was just angry.
Yeah, this was my apartment, and she wasn't doing anything in the sink. I think she literally just like
spite.
Her, it's like it's an instinct. Yeah, the spite just came up, like, you know, yeah, it welled up through her.
Merry Christmas. Yeah. So by the way, Nastassia, have you watched Rudolph this year?
Oh, I haven't. You have because you have kids, but I have not.
You got to get on that Rudolph. Got to do that.
You're going to say something else.
What?
Yeah, I know. I will.
We've watched all the Rankin Bass stuff.
Nice.
But like, my kids are old enough to not really need it anymore. It's just a family thing at this point.
Cute.
Yeah.
Are you a fan of? Cute. Are you a fan of Elf, or is that like, you know? Is
Am
it
I a
do
human
you like
being?
The homage? Do you not? Well, there. Fair enough. All right. It's my favorite thing of the holiday season is bye, buddy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Mr.
Yeah.
Narwhal.
Yeah.
My favorite, my favorite in Elf is I know him. You know what I mean? When he's like, Santa's coming here tomorrow, he's like, oh my God. He freaks out.
I didn't realize how funny, because I had rewatched it for the first time in many years, the little person scene is.
With Dinklage?
Yeah. Where he Elf
it's crazy.
Just doesn't
call me an elf one more time, and then he does the wave.
Yes.
He does the wave, and then he does the run, flying,
yes,
running.
Yes, so good.
And Will Ferrell's holding out. Remember when the raccoon hits Will Ferrell? He tries to give the, you need a hug, Mr. Raccoon? And the raccoon flies at him. Oh,
so
God.
Good.
That's so good. Was it the other? Oh, the one that we use in our family all the time is, you smell like beef and cheese. Like, yeah, you smell like beef and cheese.
Yeah.
You don't smell like, you smell like beef and cheese.
I feel like at random times of the year, Nastassia just yells at Dave, you sit on a throne of lies.
Yeah, yeah, right? Well, that's not because of Elf, though. That's just the case.
Yeah.
Wait, Dave, can you talk about the show that we watched where we were horrified? We watched it.
Which one would that be? Oh, which one?
The Ed Asner thing. You and I... Our texts, I have a screenshot of them. It is so funny. You and I were horrified. Horrified. But it's also
okay, so
for
they
a
were,
good cause. Really good.
They're doing a read-through, a table read, right, of It's a Wonderful Life. And as I say, here's the thing. For those of you that don't know, I don't watch it anymore because I got saturated with It's a Wonderful Life because my crazy Uncle Larry used to come over to the house at Christmas time because we would all, you know, be at the same house at Christmas time, and he would find whatever TNT marathon was, and he would keep It's a Wonderful Life on an endless loop. Endless loop. And this is before we, you know, we didn't own it. It was crazy. And so I'm saturated, but... It's a Wonderful Life is a Christmas thing with Jimmy Stewart. And so Jimmy Stewart is the main character. And so they, instead of Jimmy Stewart, they got Pete Davidson. Now, I like Pete Davidson. Nastassia likes Pete Davidson.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
He did a really good job, Matt.
Okay.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Jimmy Stewart, well-known, like, old-style, like, literally a bomber pilot in World War II, like the exact, I cannot imagine Jimmy Stewart getting baked. I cannot imagine Jimmy Stewart even acting like someone who is getting baked. He, like Pete Davidson and Jimmy Stewart are the exact opposites of each other. And so I think a lot of people reacted negatively to the idea of Pete Davidson doing this table read, but I thought he did a good job.
Yeah.
Especially this. Like, you know how, like, in a table read, like, you're not doing, like, necessarily the full acting thing because you're just reading it, you know, ostensibly for the first time? But sometimes, whenever Pete had to get angry, he went full Staten Island on people, and that was real. Right, Stas?
Yeah, that was good. Go
get your mother! I was like, whoa, geez. Whoa, Pete, I'm feeling that one. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway. So, but they had some technical difficulties, and your boy Ed Asner, the Santa, the real Santa from Elf, not the beef and cheese Santa, he's about 800 million years old, right, Stas?
Yes.
And so he was sitting in this chair.
He played Old Man Potter.
He played Old Man Potter. So he was sitting in this chair, and every time they would cut to him, he would have a different blanket on, but he wasn't moving. Like, so I think people were just swapping out his blanket, and he had a big Kermit the Frog colored mug of tea. And then he would just, as it was going, fall asleep in the middle of the thing. And then they would wake him up. He'd be like, he'd flip through the pages, do his line. But he's a perfect Potter because, you know, he's like the master curmudgeon. And Vanessa Williams was the narrator. She did a great job. Her and her brother, who I didn't really know beforehand. And then as they cut out, they forgot to cut Ed Asner's mic immediately when they cut. And he does the classic old man, who is our narrator again? And then they cut out, boom. That was the end. It's for a good cause, though. It's for the Ed Asner Center, which supports people who are on the autism spectrum, which obviously is a cause dear to my heart. And this leads us into the charity portion of the episode. Nastasia, what's going on?
I thought we were doing Phil singing first.
What does it matter?
Okay, let me get the email. I don't have the email.
Oh, Phil's got to go teach recorder. He can't stay on long.
Is Phil still on?
Yeah.
Oh, Phil's on.
Okay.
I'm like, again, I'm sitting by the in the basement, like by the Home Alone furnace. So I'm trying to mute just in case.
While Nastasia is getting that stuff together, can you hum your favorite recorder version of Lady Greensleeves?
Lady Greensleeves. I can't even hear Greensleeves in my head right now.
I see. Go.
But it's like the do 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 do. There you go. Merry Christmas, Dave.
It's not supposed to be that low. It's like supposed to be like, you know, idiots with panpipes and stuff running around.
What did you bring Phil Bravo on for his falsetto?
Yeah, I got one range, man.
Speaking of falsetto, there's a new Bee Gees documentary out that I'm sure Nastasia is gonna wish to see because
I haven't watched it yet. Yeah.
Yeah, she's a fan.
Okay, ready? So we, in our newsletter, we had asked for people to send us our charities to call out on the air for people to give at the end of the year, and we have some. So from Brady Vickers, he or she said that Southern Smoke is a great charity. He's sure it's already on our list since we worked.
It is a great charity. We've worked for them before.
Yeah. Chang just won $1 million for them on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire.
The nice thing about that charity is that, the people, it's like a direct give. Like the story, were you there with me that night? Or I know you came, but you might have been, you were late. I don't know if you heard his story where like this line cook got it hit, right, by a car or something like that. And he was in the ICU and like they didn't have enough insurance to pay for the bills. And so, you know, basically, I think they were going to pull the plug on the guy, and the mom heard about Southern Smoke and called Southern Smoke, and they were like, yeah, and they paid his med bills, and he's alive today. So, like, that's the kind of thing they can do, like, direct action to help actual individual humans in the hospitality industry. So, they're good. Right, Sasha?
Yeah. And then the next two are a result of the story that we posted on our newsletter about how you and I made 30,000 cookies for the troops and nobody wanted them. So I think people thought we were doing that again this year. And
John, what's French for oh hell no?
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
It's more absolutely not, but yeah.
Yeah.
But if people are baking cookies and want to give them, they're from Julie Snarsky, our old friend at David Michael's.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. She said that there's a company in Boardman, Ohio called Buttermaid Bakery, and they ship pallets of cookies to soldiers around the world. She also works for an organization called Caring for Friends, and they're in Northeast Philadelphia by David Michael, and they help people get meals that need meals. So there's that if you're on that side of the world. And then there's also another place, Mercer Street Friends in Trenton, New Jersey. And then Robert from SoCal said he lives in San Diego and he's been to Existing Conditions. He loves cookies and he'll gladly pass them to the homeless in San Diego if anyone is baking cookies, because Dave and I are not.
Yeah, and if you work with Nastasia, she'll take a bite out of it first and then hand it.
It is not true.
Okay, all right. No, she didn't take a bite of any of our cookies, but this is a well-known Nastasia Lopez trick, which we won't talk about now. We'll talk about it later. If someone is curious, we can talk about this famous trick later, but not today. Yeah. All right, nice.
Yeah.
Nice. And so I would be remiss. Well, we're talking about direct action charities. I mean, obviously, whatever, I won't get it. I'm not going to get
it. Which one are you
going to say? I'm going to say MOFED. Jeez. What?
Well, I think, okay. I think this is more like charity for charity. Charity.
Okay.
You know what I mean? People that need things type thing.
All right. Yeah. Speaking of people that need things, before Phil Bravo, I'm going to talk about a little Christmas miracle that Booker and Dax could use. Get this, people. So listeners of the show or people who have gone on Amazon and tried to purchase it, we've gotten a lot of emails recently. Hey, why can't I buy a Searsol? Here's the answer. The answer is, and we've spoken about this before, that Amazon, you know, because someone didn't follow the instructions and didn't understand that when you season a Searsol, you have to burn off the binder in the insulation. It says so right on the package. It's a well-known thing. There it is. But because this person complained, Amazon now is asking us for quote-unquote certification from a laboratory that is quote-unquote certified. Here's the funny part. Here's where we need our Christmas miracle. If anyone out there can hear my voice and understands what I'm saying, right? Amazon just wants it to be certified. But when we told them that we have spent, before we ever came out with the Searsol, that we spent months trying to find any sort of standard for what we're doing and came up with zero because there are literally no standards for it, right? And to be a standard, it has to be a standard that was written by a body like UL, like the NFPA, National Fire, but one of these bodies needs to write a standard that then laboratories will do, right? And so we told Amazon there is no standard. And they were like, how about this standard, UL 147, which is a standard for torches? And we're like, well, that standard doesn't apply because we're not making the torch. And they were like, you're right, that doesn't apply, but you need to find something. But here's the thing, labs won't certify things unless there is a standard. And they won't just, for instance, like I could say, hey, listen, the Searsol is actually a plush toy. Can you just certify it that it's safe as a plush toy? And right, but they won't do that. Like labs don't play that game because they don't want to lose their standing. I'd be like, listen, and there's no standards for inert hunks of metal. Like there's no standard for a ladle, right? Other than you could get NSF for a ladle, but we can't get NSF
a ladle is dangerous because I could bash your head out with it.
Oh, and have wanted to many times. But my point is that like, is it that there's literally no standard. So. Like a friend of ours was like, why don't you try to write a standard? But then, so I wrote a standard, about like how to check to make sure that this inert hunk of metal wouldn't catch on fire, which of course it cannot, right? And then, but the labs are like, this is not a regular standard. We won't do it. So we've been to like, I think four labs in Shenzhen and like one in Hong Kong. No one... Because here's the thing, labs are worried about their name, right? And they don't want to put a certification mark on a product if it's not a standard that is recognized. And we're like, we don't need a certification mark on the product. We just need to send a piece of paper on your letterhead to Amazon saying literally that you are a lab and you have looked at it. It's so meaningless. And this is why you guys can't buy a Searsol, because the decision of the judges is arbitrary, but also final.
Give them the best part, right? Dave. What email did I get yesterday?
Oh. I've noticed that your product's not in stock right now. Maybe you should do something because people want to buy it. We're like,
That was from Amazon. Amazon told us we should put more Searsols in stock because we don't have any. Yet they're holding us back from putting any in stock because
they literally removed the search term from the thing and only put up the knockoffs. It's so crazy. Like they didn't kill the knockoffs, which like aren't made to the same standards and frankly probably aren't safe because they don't care about things like balance and whether or not they're going to fall
up,
over.
I'm going to interject. Straight up not safe. What people say about them, you know, that they emit green, yellowish gases coming off of them, you know, not only an R knockoff, but another knockoff. I've seen like black metal dust coming out of them. Like all the knockoffs are garbage. They are not worth the money.
Yeah, well, and they're sold out now because no one can buy the real anymore, so everyone bought the fake.
Yep.
I'm convinced that Amazon is making and selling the knockoffs, and this is all just an Amazon thing.
Well, I appreciate your conspiracy theories, Nastasia. I mean, I really do. I'm not just being here. I think that's giving them too much credit. That's like saying that the U.S. government can do any conspiracies. They can't. They're too dumb. You know what I mean? Like, not dumb. I don't mean it that way, people. If you work in the government, that's not what I mean. What I mean is, is, you know, look, you know, it's like one person can paint the Sistine Chapel. Five people can't even paint a house. Do you know what I'm saying? Because they interfere with each other and they can't get their work done. You know what I mean? It's like, I don't trust that they can accomplish anything like that. Anyway, whatever. That's just me. Okay. So, Phil Bravo, or should I say Phil Bravo?
I just want to say, Dave, that felt like the most Christmas thing of first, you're doing basically Dan Aykroyd with his, like, this is a bag of glass and little Johnny Switchblade. You know, how are you going to hurt yourself with this?
What was the name of that toy company again?
Straight, like, everyone's, I can't even remember. But it's like you turned into everyone's uncle who at the end was like, five people can't even paint a house. The government's not going to fix it. You know, this is the most Christmas morning I've had. You know?
Listen. I'm here for you. If you can't see your crazy Uncle Larry and your crazy Uncle Ralph, I'm here for you, people.
Crazy Uncle Dave.
Oh, my God. You know what? I am, in fact. So, like, most of my nieces and nephews, let's just put it this way. They didn't really get me, right? They don't really get me. Like, I'm not their cup of tea. But my I'm growing on them, right? I'm growing on them. Actually, the ones who moved to Atlanta, like, they're pro me, right? But the youngest of all of them, Mabel, she has always been on my side. So Mabel has always been down with Crazy Uncle Dave. However, she does refer to me as Crazy Uncle Dave, which I appreciate. You know, everyone needs a Crazy Uncle XYZ. You don't need two. One. Yeah, well, I'm here for you, Phil. So are you here for me? Are you going to do it?
Oh, no.
I'm here for you, Dave.
Okay.
All right. Do you have any plugs?
Do you have any plugs before you go and sing and get off?
I don't think I have any plugs. My plugs are, it sounds like those charities that you mentioned are amazing. Everyone should.
Do you own PhilBravo.com? Do you own PhilBravo.com?
That's a good question. It feels like something I probably bought 10 years ago, like late at night and drunk.
So how do people get in touch with you when they want to hire you for voiceover work, which is what you should be doing? Yeah.
Well, if you Google Phil Bravo, basically you're going to find a very successful high school football coach. So, you know.
How's his voice?
I don't think very good. But I keep on getting emails from random kids that are like, I'm in, coach.
Are you also going to sing Put Me In, Coach? I'm ready to play today.
I really should.
But that's more of a high register song. You got to get that Fogerty, and you're a different kind of jerk than your man Fogerty. So
Phil's email is philbravo@gmail.com, right, Phil?
He's happy to set up one-on-one Zoom recorder lessons for you.
I am. You want some voiceover work? That's great. Also, support music education in your communities, everybody. That's a good Christmas thing.
All right, do it. Grinch it up. Do it.
That was my plug. All right, Dave. Can you give me the clarinet lead in?
Oh, hold on a second. You got my mind's erased. Like what's going on constantly in my head now is the Heat Miser song. Ba bum 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 bum. You know what I mean? That song is still amazing.
So that's all I have in my head.
That one?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. I just did it.
Do it again.
So you've got
Dave.
You're a mean one, Mr. Grinch. You really are a heel. You're as cuddly as a cactus. You're as charming as an eel, Mr. Grinch. You're a bad banana with a greasy black peel. And
oh, that's so strong.
But I think that's what you're looking for, right?
It's so good.
Oh, that's stuff. Yeah.
So good.
Wait, are you also a rotter?
I'm a rotter. Yeah. My heart is, and I don't know if you know this, but actually full of unwashed socks. And my soul is full of gunk. It's a whole thing.
So here's something that I did not know until this year, which I'm ashamed to say. He's not saying tomato squash because it's not a tomato squash. I was like, what the hell is a tomato squash? And I looked it up. I was Googling forever to try to find this elusive.
Dave.
Splotched, yeah. I did not know that. Yeah. I thought that there was a squash.
That would actually.
And I felt, yeah.
Yeah, that would be an amazing thing to make. You can make a dead tomato splotched with moldy purple spots. That's a good, solid holiday cheer.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's like the best. We could just, you know what? I'm actually doing that right now. I am fermenting. I'm making my fermented salsa recipe. So I have some tomatoes, but they're not. They're fermenting. That doesn't count, right? It needs to be purple splots or whatever it is. All right.
Thank you, Phil. Nice.
Thanks. What other good deep voice things are there, Phil?
Someone requested. What was the one that someone requested?
Well, there's I'm Dreaming of a White Christmas. Yeah, White Christmas as well.
But that's not a deep voice register. That's more. I mean, you don't strike me as the Bing Crosby type.
Yeah, I'm not that smooth.
Yeah, maybe you could do the Andrew Sisters. That would be amazing if you did like all. If you did all of the Andrew Sisters parts, but like three octaves down on that album.
Oh, like, wait, Phil. Dave.
Give me some Melly Kaliki Maka, Phil.
Yeah. Melly Kaliki Maka. Yeah, they can do that.
Phil, you could Rickroll people in real life.
Yeah.
That's not Christmas. Rick Astley is not a Christmas character.
Wait, Phil, Dave, we had to do, what was the one we just did, Phil, for Pat? Wonderful Christmas Time.
Oh, the.
Yeah.
Yeah, Wonderful Christmas Time.
Can you give
that
us a
video
preview?
Will be coming
that
out,
video is going to come. Yeah. So what? Can you just do a little bit?
No, I'm not gonna. I don't want to give that up. Wow. I did the whole guitar solo in there, or I think it's a keytar. The keytar solo I did vocally. So that's gonna be some watch YouTube, everyone. It's coming.
The YouTube. All right.
Wait,
so listen, I'm gonna research.
Is your band gonna have a Grinch? Like you should have. You're a mean one, Mr. Grinch, as a video. Are you going to do that?
He won't because he's a rotter.
Mm. Also, I think Spike Jonze's novelty band would be like the best band name.
Yeah? What was the name of his band?
No, I think just naming it Spike Jonze's novelty band.
Yeah. All right. Yeah.
All right, that didn't sell. Didn't land, Dave. Didn't land.
It's fine. It's good.
Take it out of your 5 minutes.
Yeah. Listen, any sort of, if you need some sort of like Thurl Ravencroft back from the dead or any of that stuff, first of all, like that name is an amazing name. Like if your last name is Ravencroft and your mom looks down and is like, you know what? Thurl, right? How strong is that? Like you're set up for life. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, like, how lucky to get born with Ravencroft as your last name. It looks so hardcore.
What if Phil, if you have a kid, it should be Ravencroft Bravo. That would be so cool.
Oh, my God. Bravo's a great last name, Phil.
Yeah, I can't
I'm not
complain.
Saying your parents botched it with the Phil, but I'm saying, like...
Hey, Phil, tell Dave what your name was going to be, and then what you were going to do with that name if they had...
I don't even remember this, Nastasia. This is the other thing with Nastasia. You say something once because you know it'll make her laugh,
Phil,
and then she's like a 2-year-old. She's like, do it again!
Phil was supposed to be Nick Bravo.
Oh, Nick Bravo. That's my middle name.
Yeah, in that case, you would have been selling cars in Florida, is what you said.
Oh, yeah.
Nick,
solid used car, like, Nick Bravo, damn glad to meet you.
Nick
What's
Bravo
it
is definitely...
this used Kia?
Nick Bravo is definitely better with a handgun than the Phil Bravo is, right? I mean, Nick... Yeah.
Well, it's also like I think. Does everyone have the what you were going to be named if you were a girl? I was going to be Kelly because it was the 70s, Dave. So Kelly Bravo would not have landed in the same way.
Kelly Bravo, yeah. Man, I don't know.
Probably same
GB, Phil.
Yeah, same vocal range is the problem. Just like I am Kelly.
Well, Nastasia, would you have been Joey because they ended up having one? That's what they chose, a boy,
I think,
or would
have been Michael?
Michael.
Yeah.
Michael.
Oddly,
Lopez?
They were gonna name her. They were gonna name her Thurl.
Yeah. Or you would look at Nastasia and be like, "Hey, yo, Mike Lopez." That's like, what?
Yeah.
Mike.
Mike Lopez and Nick Bravo here to get you in a Ford F-150.
Well, it would have been Kelly Bravo at that point. Would have been Mike Lopez and Kelly Bravo, which, yeah, I'd buy a car. I'd buy a car for sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So listen, stay on, Phil, because maybe you can chime in if you don't have to go teach recorder to small children who are uninterested. By the way, Phil, do you enjoy organ music?
I you know, from time to time. You mean like full out like Bach organ music?
Or yeah.
You mean like
Yeah.
You know, it's got its place and time.
You ever walk into a church and not know there's going to be organ music, and then there's organ music, and you're like, oh yeah.
Yes, I walk into a church and I do a full out, oh yeah.
Oh, every time there's organ music. I love it. But, yeah. An organ is like, it's one of those instruments that like you can see why they put those into a church, because it rattles your whole body. It's like a religious experience. A good organ, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, but the other thing is that if you watch the organ footwork, it's remarkable. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Cameron Carpenter. Look up Cameron Carpenter.
Is that crazy, a modern organist? I'm more of an E. Power Biggs man myself.
It is.
Yeah.
Ooh, fair enough. Yeah. No, he's like the rock star of organ these days. That's right. It's true. It's a thing.
Yeah. Organ's cool. Organ's good. All right. So Jake wrote in via email, I'm interested in whipping beer with aquafaba.
Oh my God. What is with people?
Without having to whip it. Do you have a ratio that works for you? Jacob, no, I don't. Listen.
Why? Wait, do we know why?
Listen. No more aquafaba questions. Like, just no more.
Listen.
2021, no more.
Here's the thing. There's two ways this can go. I have actively resisted aquafaba, not because it's bad, but just because so many other people are working on it that I didn't feel I needed to work on it. Right? Nastasia, is that not a fair reason?
You think it's disgusting, too.
I've never had it.
You think the concept is disgusting.
I've eaten chickpeas. I love chickpeas. Anyways, my point is this. You know you can now buy aquafaba powder? It's like powderized aquafaba. Anyway, I've never investigated chickpea hydrocolloids because I have plenty of purified hydrocolloids that I can work with if I want to. However, I feel, and John, maybe John can weigh in because he has no hatred one way or the other, that maybe I should just take the time to work with it so when people ask me the question, I can just be like, here's your answer.
No.
Hey, you want to know another Christmas kick in the kahunas is for years I've been telling people that they should go to Mark Power and Sons in Guntersville, Alabama for all their soda needs.
God, yeah.
Right? And Nastasia is so sick of carbonation questions. I think we have a couple on this thing. She's so sick of carbonation questions that like every day she made John call me and be like, have you done your carbonator video yet so we don't have to talk about it? Have you done it? Have you done it? Have you done it? And so finally I did it, like after years. And I've been dealing with Mark Power in Guntersville, Tim specifically, there for 20 years or more. And right when I do the video is when they're like, you know what? We're getting out of the business.
Oh, my God.
And, like, in the video, I have the part numbers. I'm like, here's Tim's telephone number. I'm like, well, can I talk to Tim? Tim doesn't work here anymore. I was like, oh, God. But, John, I don't know if you can call it up before the show's over. They gave us a replacement house to deal with. Because if you're a company, if you're, like, a bar or a restaurant, you can buy all the stuff from Fox Beverage. But they won't sell to individual humans. But if you can find it, John, that would be helpful.
Let me see if I can find it.
From Brian, I have a bunch of Hachiya persimmons, the astringent variety. I want to make hoshigaki, you know, the ones that are not the flat ones, but the persimmons that you hang on strings and you kind of massage them and they turn into like little like sugar bloomed pruny things. You guys know what I'm talking about?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. But don't want to wait and hang them up and massage them daily. They get that wonderful sugar bloom when dry. Do you have any shortcuts on how to make them in a dehydrator, time and temperature? I don't. I've never done it. Do you think the same effect would be possible in a dehydrator? Thanks, Brian. Look, in life, most things that take a long time, there are ways to do it quickly. The results might not be, or probably will not be the same. That doesn't mean that they'll be bad. I'm going to say that you should do the same thing that Nastasia Lopez and I do when we do our apple heads, because it's not like we have all day to wait around and make millions of apple heads.
I would use we loosely.
Do you own a dehydrator?
All you had to do is stick them in there.
Okay, you know what? No respect for what I do. Eat it. So it's like what you have to do is you have to build. You can take the rack that you have, take everything off, and if you have an Excalibur, right? And depending on the length you do, I guess you should use twine. I would make I used copper because I wasn't eating them and I had a lot of copper around. Little copper hangers. So you bend like a cross, almost like a Christmas tree stand, into the bottom, punch it through, and then make a hook, and you can hang them so none of them are touching. And then it's just a question of getting your temperatures right so you don't get case hardened. What you're worried about here is case hardening. If you're going to do the persimmons, though, I wouldn't put copper into them. I would just get a length. I would get bamboo skewers, and I would cut them into pieces. And then thread the stuff through with like a larding needle and tie the skewer so it doesn't fall off the thing. But then you'll have to fashion a hook. I mean, the copper really was nice in that respect. Maybe you could get non-reactive stainless wire and do it the easy way like I do. But that's how I would do it. I would hang them in the dehydrator, and I know it works fine for apple heads, but apparently I don't, because I've apparently never worked on apple heads with Nastasi before.
Okay. I miss apple heads, Dave, don't you?
Yeah, but now do you have that song going through your head?
Yeah.
Apple-headed doll. And anyway, did we ever make an apple-head doll with fur boots?
No.
Or Reeboks with the straps?
No.
We should have.
We made a Jay-Z apple-head.
I'm not going to get into that. That's what you said at our favorite drug front event that we did, where we went to a bar which shall remain nameless. And we flew all the way across the country to do this event. And they're like, I don't know, make like 5 cocktails. What does it matter? We don't need to make money. This is a drug front. Isn't that what they said?
Yes. Bar in LA. It doesn't matter. He doesn't work there anymore. So we can just say what it is.
All right. Harvard and Stoned. Yeah. 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 Anyway, I don't know. Harvard and Stoned. Look, we're kidding, Matt. It's a joke.
All right.
Yeah. This episode brought to you by Appeal. Here at HRN, we care about reducing waste across our food system, from farms to home kitchens. We know that about half of the produce we grow ends up in the trash. We all want to enjoy produce at peak freshness and reduce the amount that gets thrown away. That's where Appeal comes in. Appeal is a plant-based protective layer that helps produce last up to twice as long. It's edible, invisible, and imitates how peels naturally protect fruits and vegetables. Because here's the thing, less waste doesn't just mean that we're throwing less food away, it also means we throw away less water, energy, and other resources that go into growing produce. Appeal works with nature to reduce waste across the food system, from the farm to the kitchen. Appeal helps us to conserve our precious resources to ensure that we have fresh food to meet our growing needs. Appeal, food gone good. Learn more at appeal.com. Michael Murno wrote in, hey, not sure who to reach out to, but here it goes. I recently batched up some eggnog in order to let it mature in time for Christmas. I used 6 cups of cream / whole milk. So that means like a mixture of cream and whole milk, I guess. 12 egg yolks, 1 pound of sugar, and about 4 to 5 cups of, so that's like 1.5 quarts, quart, like 1/5 and a fraction, of rum, brandy, bourbon by measure. Let's say it's 4 cups, because in the end you did it to taste. I know you've talked about aged eggnog on the show, but can't seem to find the episode in the back catalog, so I'm wondering if you could just briefly talk about it so that I could have a soundbite to reassure my wife that I am not trying to poison her. Are you not trying to poison her, Michael? I don't know. Here's the thing. It all depends on time plus alcohol and sugar. So the two things that you have in there that are going to stop the eggs from... The cream is not a problem. It's either going to spoil or it's not, but it's not a problem. What everyone is theoretically worried about is the salmonella in the eggs. And the interesting thing about eggnog recipes is that the longer you keep them, not the better they get, although some people think so. Nick Bennett, our friend Nick Bennett, has aged them for I don't know how many years and brought them out. But you need to keep them for a certain length of time. in order for all the bacteria to die, because they don't die right away from the eggs. And the amount of time it takes is going to depend on the alcohol and the sugar level, both of which are going to inhibit the salmonella. And I would just check your, there is published online, Rockefeller University has the, they did the famous challenge test where they inoculated their eggnog recipe with salmonella and waited to see how long it took to kill all the salmonella. And so if your alcohol and sugar levels are anywhere close to theirs, I would give that little paper soundbite to the family and reassure them that while in fact they will die, it won't be from that.
We Wait, so eventually. Dave, are you saying that the eggnog that Phil made that year, where it was with eggs and he served it immediately, was not okay?
Well, we all know that you guys don't care about each other.
No, that's what I was saying. That was one of the most irresponsible things in the world. I think that maybe what you did is tried to save everybody.
Yeah.
by sabotaging it. Look. Yeah, I'm pretty positive I gave like 63 people salmonella that year. Merry Christmas.
In the real life, right? You know, a lot, and I don't know. I don't honestly know. It would be interesting. I could probably look it up. A chart on salmonella incidence in eggs per 1,000 year by year, right? Because obviously the more confined the hens are, the larger the chance for contamination in your egg supply. But there are people have always also said, I'm not worried about it because I only use organic eggs where, like, I'm a friend with the chicken. I'm like, there is no evidence that...
Phil, your eggs were from the deli on 48th and 9th, right?
Exactly. He's friends with the bodega guy. For free.
Yeah, he's friends with the bodega guy.
By that, you mean the bodega cat, I think.
Yeah. That's who was pooping out the eggs. The cat ate the chicken and pooped out the eggs.
But Dave, isn't it a thing like supply chain? Isn't theoretically, because the trucks are now refrigerated in a way they weren't in like the 60s, that theoretically there's a lower instance of salmonella regardless?
I don't think that's true.
That, no? Maybe. Let me say. The internet lied to me?
Look, all I'm saying is that in the absence of data, I'm just going to go say I don't know the data. But what I will say is that there are many recipes that call for raw egg, like Caesar salad. And they're, you know, you're just rolling the dice. And that's dice that we roll on the regular. You know what I mean? Or you can pasteurize the egg yolks if you want, or pasteurize the whole eggs if you have an immersion circulator, or you can buy pasteurized eggs. But that's just, you know, it's one of those, risks that people take. And, one of the big things is just letting people know that they're taking the risk. And most people who are on the younger non-immunocompromised side are willing to take the risk of eating a raw egg every now and again. Right?
I like, Dave, that the your answer to the question started with, like, and then you can give your wife this white paper that outlines why it's relatively safe. And then you ended with, you know, I mean, you drive a car. That's dangerous. Drink the eggnog.
I mean, no? Am I wrong?
I mean, I think you're right.
Yeah.
And again, the party in question that Nastasia is talking about, I did not inform people that they were all drinking raw egg. Because I was not responsible as a human at that point in my life.
That checks out, Phil. That checks out. Yeah.
So apologies to everybody.
Yeah, from Wet Market Dynamics via Twitter, we have been using your. Oh, you like that? We have been using your French fry recipe. Do you have a comparable recipe technique for potato chips? # not a Thanksgiving question. This is an old one. I'm actually working on one for forthcoming someday book, The Miracle of Moisture Management. I have run over the past month probably 25 potato chip tests, and here's a question for you people. You people, meaning anyone who can hear this. What is your ideal chip? And you have to, and Nastasia has a chip she says she's going to send me because she has an ideal chip out where you are, right, Nastasia?
Yeah.
Yeah. So the real question is everyone gets hyped up on the variety of the potatoes. Yeah, true, fine, as far as it goes. But it's really like thickness, crunch level, color.
I think Deep texture. River is pretty good for a mass-produced chip. No.
So you like them? You like them hard?
Yeah.
So like not like a crispy lace. Do you care how dark the potato is? Because that's the thing.
I think the darker it is, the more I'm like, oh, it's going to be harder, so it's going to be good.
So you like a dark chip.
Yeah.
Yeah, so a lot of people don't like a dark chip. And in fact, a lot of work that's done in potato chip. So like, I'll just say this. The great divide in potato chips is like old school kettle, where it's basically slicing almost directly into the oil, right? Versus some form of soak or blanch, where you're blanching it and soaking it. And you know, if you're not doing a soak or a blanch beforehand, right, the soak and the blanch is not just to get rid of extra starch, right, but to get rid of sugars on the outside. And if you get rid of those sugars, right, those sugars cause it to go brown if it's cooked. Also, the thicker you slice it, the more brown it's going to be because you cook longer. So, you know, if you don't care, right, then you can stay on the kettle side. If you do care about it getting brown, then you you need to go through one of these procedures that I've been working on. And the other little tidbit is that you want a high specific gravity potato, because you want the lowest moisture content potato, the highest solids ratio potato going in. But that's all I can say about it right now. For more, you'll have to wait till I'm done with my tests and I have a definitive idea of what I'm doing.
Yeah, all right. Represent.
Jeebus, I got so
it's
many.
10-10.
From, yeah, but we didn't answer anyone's question. Hold on a second. Here, hey, Dave, Nastasia, Matt in the COVID booth, and also Phil. Mark doesn't know you're here, Phil, but, you know, I'm welcoming you in my for Mark. I've recently started working at a deli at a grocery store, and we have a couple of Rationale combi ovens, which we use for reheating cryovac food items and for cooking the ubiquitous roast chicken to go, chicken breasts that are eventually diced up for salads, wraps, and joints, and et cetera, et cetera. I've been slightly alarmed by the temperatures that we cook to. The chicken is done until it's probed at 190 Fahrenheit. Ouch! The beef at 154 Fahrenheit. Booker, what's 154 Fahrenheit in Celsius?
68.
68, zikes! And the brisket at 172. Brisket's fine if you're doing higher temp stuff like barbecue style. I find these temps to be high and the enemies of quality, especially the chicken breasts, which are dry and chalky out of the oven. I believe that. I believe that you referred to these ovens being pretty accurate over about 140. Well, they're accurate in the average, right? So they'll swing like 10 degrees or so or more, but their average is pretty accurate. And I'm wondering if there's any danger in doing these products at a lower temp like I would do in my home, my circulator. My thought is that we have these expensive, accurate machines, and we would be providing a better product if the temperatures were more in line with modern cooking thought. I do not, however, want to put anyone, including the immunocompromised people and infants, in danger. Where should my limits be? And should I just let sleeping dogs die? So see, what do they do chicken to? 190, that's like crack smoking temperature. That's just crazy. Just like, yeah, take it down. There's no need to cook that high. There's no need to cook that high, especially if you can temp it and then cook it longer. If you can get it up to like a known good pasteurizing temperature and then let it ride, then you've got a little bit of a thermal thing. And I've never even heard of 190. That's just, what's 190 in Celsius, Booker?
190 Fahrenheit?
Yeah.
88.
Oh my God.
You heard that right.
Jesus. That is, look, the chicken died. You've killed the chicken. Don't kill it again. John, you with me on this?
Yeah, absolutely. Criminal, what's happening there.
Yeah. Remember that's one of my favorite lines from Big Night. It's a criminal. It's a criminal. That's Shalhoub's great. I mean, like, Shalhoub's done a lot of good work, but the Shalhoub and the Tucci in that movie, class. Which one of you people hadn't seen it? Matt, have you seen it yet?
I have seen it. I saw it. I watched it early in the pandemic. It was great.
Yeah, all right. Sergio wrote in, hope I'm not leaving anyone out, list of people. I know the hammer does not like Aussie accents. She told me the last time I tried to convince her to visit for food and art, but we are not all Crocodile Dundee. I should hope not. That movie does not hold up, people. If you go back and you watch Crocodile Dundee, it does not hold up. It's like saying all New Yorkers are Simpsons style of rednecks. Well, whoa, none of us are like that. You're thinking of two different people. You got your rednecks. So if you want to see like rednecks and New Yorkers in the same, like you have to, I could tell you where to go,
then
to
go
see
to Florida,
every,
I think. Well, rednecks and New Yorkers, it's just Florida.
No, but if you just want to do it by car, like you could go check out the Swamp Yankees up in like, you know, Northern Connecticut, right? Right, John? I could say that. You're a nutmegger. You like a Swamp Yankee, right? Anyway. Like, you know, we have our own rednecks here in the Northeast. People don't remember that. They're like, oh, it's all you coastal elites. Not true. We have real rednecks here. You know what I mean? Anyone going to back me up? Yeah. All right. I once looked at a property. We couldn't afford it to buy it. Get this. On the Connecticut River, right? And so there's a kind of a blue-collar side of the Connecticut River and a fancy Dan side of the Connecticut River. I'm not going to say which side John is on right now, but it's the fancy side. Fancy, so yeah. I was on the other side, and everyone's dream is to have a plot of land on the river because it comes with a God-given right to have your own dock, and that means you can have your own boat on the Connecticut, right? So the plots of land were the width of the slips so that people could put their docks out. And I went to go look at it in November, and the person who was gonna was showing me his property, right? They kind of had running water, but the like a Nastasia favorite thing, like the bathroom was kind of outside of their trailer thing. And he was outside shirtless cooking over a tire fire, slugging rum out of a Captain Morgan's handle. All right? Now, don't anyone tell me that we don't have our own rednecks up here. Anyway. I didn't get to the question. Anyway, not trying to convince her anymore. Dave, you should visit and bring Harold. Question time now. I have seen black garlic.
We're going to have one of those lunches.
Oh, jeepers. He just said, don't bother. You're not going to go. Oh, you would go. Come on. I have seen black garlic recipes for the rice cooker, tried it and done it. Seen black onion recipes, which apparently need a bit more moisture. I tried shallots, and they just disappeared. I guess they need more moisture. I never tried shallots. Question is, for some reason, I have a mental block on shallots because the French love them so much that I've never gotten into them. Is that unfair? I like a fried shallot, like a crispy fried shallot. But like who the hell wants to peel all those things and then do?
I like shallots more than onions and stuff.
Really? Do you enjoy the cross, the shallion? You ever use those, Nastasia? The shallions?
No, yeah, that sounds good.
They're like long, like a shallot, but bigger, like an onion, and the taste is right in between. John, do you?
Oh
do you,
yes,
you,
they're yeah. good. Yes.
Yeah, they're good. Yeah, they're good. And they're not as much of a pain. First of all, shallots, you're like, I got to peel all these. And then when you take the outside layer off, they're like, ah, it's actually two things inside that you need to peel again. You know what I mean? Hate it. All right. Question is, will the sugars on corn work the same way as the garlic? Could you make sweet black corn, even theoretically? Love your show, and am Argentinian in Melbourne, so not the Hammer's average Aussie accent, for sure. Listen, I don't think so. I had looked, this question came in a while ago, but because we've had a bunch of guests, I haven't got a chance to answer it, and I'm pretty sure that it's not just the sugar, it's the very complicated sulfur chemistry that's going on in different alliums, and that's why it happens with different alliums, but it might be possible to do a mix of like garlic and corn or something like that and get an interesting result. But you know, I don't know. Let me know, but I would guess not. I've held things that have some sugar in them for several days in a rice cooker and not had things change, but I haven't tried corn. Crookshank wrote in via the chat room, what's the best way to remove skins from chickpeas? They've tried baking soda, but the removal is still a pain. I don't have a good thing for that. John, do you have a good chickpea removal
idea? Hey, this is the last question.
Hold up. Do you have one, John?
John is gone.
No, sorry, dogs keep barking. No, I do not. Yeah. And I think Kenji wrote about this as well for like a good hummus, and he says there is no good way to remove the skins. It's just tedious work.
Yeah, you know what else sucks? Removing the skins off of almonds. I don't care what people say. Like, first of all, you've ruined that dish towel now. You guys all know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
You rubbed it. Dish towel ruined. Or like.
Just buy them. Okay. Merry Christmas.
Hold up, hold up. Can I sharpen serrated knives with sharpening stones? The, Spyderco. Google it.
Merry Christmas.
Spyderco makes a special sharpener to sharpen serrated things, but you cannot do it with a regular stone.
Stone.
Goodbye.
Wait.
No, Dave. Dave.
Dave. Hold on. We have a bunch of. Hold on. We have a bunch of questions that we didn't
get
to.
Goodbye, everybody. I'm out.
Okay. You're bye. When's our next show, John?
Next week.
Are we doing a show next week?
Yeah. So get over it.
I didn't know we were doing a next show next week. That's why I couldn't find out because you're so willing to
Matt,
tell people
is
to
there
blow
a show
up
next week.
I was gonna do whatever you wanted to do.
There you go.
All right. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
Christmas with nostalgia.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Right. Yeah. Now you guys know. Enjoy.
We have a meeting at 10:30 at
1:30.
Oh, and we're gonna prep so much for the next 13 minutes that I can't die. I'm not gonna think about it even. People, if I have a meeting with you, I'm not thinking about it until 30 seconds beforehand. Just as you know. Happy holidays. Cooking Issues.
Cooking Issues is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.